Gather round, one and all, and listen to tales of excitement and adventure. Tales of daring heroes, savage monsters, and bards who just couldn't keep it in their pants. Tales of friendship, nobility, drunken foolishness, and unforgettable fun. These are tales of role-playing games, fair listeners, and this is Rollin' Bones. My name is Ryan Howard, and I shall be your guide. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Rollin' Bones with Ryan Howard, your source for the best in RPG interviews. I am your host and Dungeon Master, as well as the King of the Boneheads, Ryan Howard, and today I had the distinct honor and privilege of talking with one of the most supportive people in the entire history of Rollin' Bones, that being the phenomenal Levi Combs, and we are talking today about his newest Kickstarter campaign, Escape from Skullcano Island. You guys have already heard me talk this thing up. It looks amazing and phenomenal, and we talk all about the artwork and, you know, what you can expect from this versus, you know, some of his other stuff that he's done, and, you know, all kinds of cool stuff. I love talking to Levi. Levi's fantastic. And so I hope you guys like what you hear and you know, decide to back this campaign because it's really great. And as of right now, we only have 9 days to go, ladies and gentlemen. So nine days to jump on this Kickstarter campaign. You won't regret it. The art looks fantastic. The guy who makes it is fantastic. I am so unbelievably excited for this book. It's going to be something special. I know it. So, yeah, with that out of the way, just a couple quick things before we jump into the interview with Levi. Of course, as you guys heard last week, I was able to record an episode of James Bond Radio recently, where I ran them through a quick session of the James Bond RPG. It was a lot of fun. We recorded that this morning as I'm recording this. You know, the guys were tons of fun. None of them had played RPGs ever. This was their first time. So, you know, to give some of that experience is something that I really love. They all had been kind of curious about, you know, what's this role-playing game stuff. And, you know, we're all Bond fans. So being able to do that for them and, you know, have them have as much fun as they had on the show, that was a lot of fun. I'm glad I got to do that. And that will be coming out soon. I'll let you guys know when that's up. One other thing that I wanted to announce real quick. Next week, we are officially going live with Rollin' Bones with Ryan Howard. What that means is that I will be doing a live show for now, Mondays at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, and that will be on Twitch. And so I will be setting all of that up. We're going live on Monday. Our first guest for that is going to end up being my old DM, Muhammad. We've already run some tests. Everything looks good. So we are going to go ahead and do that this coming Monday, Memorial Day. I hope you guys are able to make it. For those of you who, you know, consume this in audio form, the recordings are going to go up on YouTube. I'm going to go ahead and, you know, record the episodes and make sure that the replays go up on YouTube, and that I'm also going to release the audio in podcast form to continue to allow those of you who listen to this on the go or in the car to, you know, continue doing that. So let's jump right into today's interview with Levi Combs talking about Escape from Skullcano Island. I hope you guys enjoy this one. I know I did, and I'll see you on the other side. All right, Boneheads, please welcome back to the show, guy who's been extremely supportive of pretty much everything we've done here just over the year that I've been doing this podcast. He's got a new Kickstarter up and running. He's made some of the craziest games that I've ever read or experienced. Ladies and gentlemen, the founder of Planet X Games, Mr. Levi Combs.
Hello.
Levi, how you doing this evening?
I'm good, man. Just getting by day.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Well, we have to kick this thing off. I know I told you this kind of in confidence, and I've talked about this on the podcast, but I just have to tell you this while I have you on the show. First of all, Howling Crater, you know, the last kind of module that you did is one awesome. I love it.
Oh, thank you.
Considered breaking it out on some of my players. I've considered breaking it out in my Dark Sun game, which I know would be completely ridiculous, but still kind of fun. But I just have to say, I have only physically gagged once while reading something, and it was while reading Howling Crater.
Well, I'll take that as a compliment, considering the source material. I'm just curious, what part was it?
It was the description of like Mama. That was what put me over the edge. I was just like, no.
You know, I'll tell you, man, on that particular description, that whole write up actually of her, there was a. I actually reached out to another friend of mine, actually Skeeter Green, who's been on your show.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, man, am I just pushing this too far? did I just push this too far? I mean, I need somebody else to just put eyes on this and kind of give me their opinion. And to his credit, man, he was like, no way. He says, look, man, go for it. This is your vision. Just shoot for the stars, man. And, you know, the crazier, the better. And that's how we ended up with that particularly vile description.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something about like body horror just in general that's very off-putting to me, but typically like descriptions of it in text doesn't bother me, but something about the words that you used and the overall picture that you painted in that text, I gagged. I literally gagged, and I went, now I know why he packaged barf bags with this thing.
Well, I mean, you know, that's getting a visceral reaction like that. That's not really my go-to thing. That's not something that I'm, you know, in every module that I do or product or whatever. I'm not trying to get that. But with this very specific thing in this module, this backwoods hillbilly cannibalistic demented family, you know, living in this irradiated crater and who are hunting the player characters, it just seemed to fit. You know, and if you've ever seen movies like The Hills Have Eyes or Wrong Turn or any of those kind of hillbilly exploitation horror movies, that's exactly where all that comes from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you captured that feeling beautifully. If you guys have not picked up Howling Crater yet, do yourself a favor. If you're into that kind of thing, you can do no better than Howling Crater.
That's very, very kind of you to say, man. Thank you.
Yeah, if you know that your players are going to get a kick out of stuff like that, or you just want to completely throw them off from kind of the stock high fantasy D&D type stuff, throw in some Howling Crater. Don't tell them you're doing it. I feel like that this is one of those modules, kind of like there's a GURPS module for their cyberpunk game called Cthulhu Punk, where you basically don't tell your players that you're about to run into Lovecraftian monstrosities. You just kind of spring it on them. And I feel like Howling Crater is in that same vein, where you have to surprise your players with it. You can't show up with the book out in front and be like, all right, what are we doing today? Where they can see the cover with the UFO on it. You gotta hide that in your notes. Stick it in your PHB, like you're back in high school trying to hide your Sports Illustrateds.
Yeah, man. And that module really does benefit, I think, from the players not knowing ahead of time, not so much with the stuff up front, with the hillbillies and the cannibals and all the the crazy mutated irradiated stuff. But once you get actually into the adventure and you get into the crashed ship, because right away you don't really know it's a crashed ship unless you just kind of bury the lead and tell them in advance. It has kind of a barrier peak sort of vibe where, you know, it's a metal walls and, you know, a clever player will figure it out pretty quickly. But, you know, it goes from just this is your typical kind of horror fantasy to all of a sudden you're deep into like the sci-fi zone. So, yeah, it benefits from not telling them in advance what's happening.
Absolutely. Well, we, of course, have a new game that you're kickstarting here. The campaign is got 14 days to go. We're already fully funded. And, of course, this is I've talked about it on the show already. I've already backed it myself. This is Escape from Skulkano Island.
Yes, sir.
And this one, this is for some of you who maybe are more into kind of the kaiju side of grindhouse cinema, because right from the get-go, you've got a two-headed gorilla fighting what looks like a purple worm. So I just got to ask, and we've talked about this a little bit on the first episode that we did together, but what was your inspiration for this particular adventure?
For this adventure, let me backtrack a minute. So all the adventures that I've done so far are kind of what I call my grindhouse adventures.
Yep.
And they're coming from a certain feel, a certain vibe, and really a certain aesthetic. As far as gaming goes, that's going to be kind of where we're playing up to like the B movie and the grindhouse cinema style, quick and dirty, and kind of feels low budget and exploitative in a certain sense. You know, for instance, with Jungle Tomb and the Mummy Bride, which was the first one, it was very exploitative. It was the cannibal exploitation movie. It's like Cannibal Holocaust and Cannibal Ferox and all these. Cannibal and jungle movies, these world that, land that time forgot, lost world kind of settings and locales. And we just build on that. And then with, of course, Howling Crater, it was the Hills Have Eyes and the hillbilly exploitation stuff. But I meshed that with kind of a 50s sci-fi vibe. Now with this one, it's very much a heroic fantasy adventure, right up front. All the things that you would expect from a high level for 5e would be tier 4, tier 3, high level adventure, heroic fantasy. But it has a very Isle of Dread kind of feel to it, right off the bat. And then there are the presence of the kaiju, these monstrous titans, these giant creatures that roam the land. Now, obviously, when I say that, you think of Godzilla, you think of King Kong, Gamera, all these famous, Toho cinema, kaiju, these giant monsters. But, obviously none of those appear in the source material. But there is definitely an homage to those giant monsters here. So if you look on the cover, you see the giant two-headed ape. He's scarred and one eye's closed, and he's like this giant, crazy, monstrous brute. He's facing off against this 150-foot gigantic purple worm-looking creature with teeth like harpoons. And that right there, it sets the feel. It sets the stage for that entire book.
Gotcha. And we have another fantastic quote here. If you remember our Howling Crater episode, I believe the quote was, if the Hills Had Eyes and Plan 9 had a baby and it let him do crack in the spaceship, was that the gist of it?
Yeah.
Well, this time, one of your friends who's kind of looked over this manuscript has said, the Isle of Dread dropped LSD with the island from Lost while watching old giant monster movies and listening to Black Sabbath, this is the adventure that you'd get.
That is a direct quote from somebody who has been on your show that that must go unnamed.
Gotcha.
But Yeah, that's pretty much the vibe. When he said that, I thought, oh man, that really that really hits the nail on the head. That covers a lot of ground, but yeah, that's it.
Gotcha. So what's kind of the big hook, the main thing that drives the players to end up on this particular island?
Well, these high-level adventures, again, this is for 5e. If you play that, it's a tier 3 to tier 4 adventure. Really more tier 4, upper high, 17th to 20th level. But you can dull it down a little bit to so that tier 3 characters can have a chance. So high-level adventures are difficult to write. And this one took, I want to say, about as long as it took me to write the other two together. So it took a really long time to write this one and to play test it and to get it right and to get the tone right. But having said that, the module starts off, there are red skies and signs of change and danger and harbingers of the apocalypse are stalking the land, and things are getting strange. There's weird weather and odd occurrences, monsters are coming out of the sea, and there's all this weird stuff is happening, without giving away too much. It's just things are very strange. And the plot evolves to where very quickly the characters find themselves on their way to Skullcano Island, which is the center of all this, where all this madness seems to be emanating from. And much like if you watch The Walking Dead, like when you watch The Walking Dead, you realize the zombies really aren't, they're really not the enemy. Okay, it's the people. There's other things that are the enemy. It's kind of the same with Skullcano Island. The kaiju, they're not really the enemy. They're just these giant creatures who live on this island. There's something else going on the island. There's other things that are happening that are causing them to become irritated or driving them forward to destroy civilization. So, again, without giving away too much, there's a lot going on. But there's the high level challenges are there. And some of the stuff, man, it's just some of the craziest stuff I've ever written. I'm pretty proud of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Even if you just go on this Kickstarter page, there's a lot of great art here. Obviously there's the two-headed ape. You've got the giant worm thing. There's a dinosaur with a laser eye.
That's true.
And a lot of all of this is very beautifully illustrated. You've got your typical Planet X collaborators here. Ed Bickford is doing some of the art here, but one guy who I really wanted to call attention to with some of this art, especially the stuff that you have up on the page right now, the work that Adrian Landeros is doing for this particular RPG is just outstanding.
Yeah, he is that. All right, so just a little background on Adrian. He's a young kid. He's like 20 years old. And he's actually a prodigy of our friend Casey Christopherson. He was in his art class as a student, and now as a man, he's gone on full with companies like Frog God Games, Necromancer Games. He does a ton of art for me and some other folks. And he is the epitome of professionalism. I feel like I can give him a broad concept and say, hey, this is kind of what I'm looking for. Not a super detailed layout, not a breakdown, not a point by point, exactly what I want. And he'll take what I give to him and he'll turn around and make it 10 times better. He is a truly talented illustrator and just a really gifted artist.
Now, do you know kind of like what medium he works in? Is he a digital guy?
So he's done a couple different things for me. He's done some actual sketch work. And then he's done some painting. And he did a really cool brush technique for the cover of Howling Crater. But he does punch up some of the stuff with digital, I believe.
Gotcha. Because yeah, I mean these covers here, they're very evocative, especially you know this first image, you know once you get past the logo, the just it hits you right in the face. Exactly what you're gonna get here. You've got a giant smoking skull on top of a mountain in the background. In the foreground, you've got a very tiny little adventurer as he's kind of looking on, you know, this fight between the two-headed ape and the worm. And I really just have to hand it to him. This is some, you know, Caldwell Elmore type stuff here. It's that good in my opinion.
No, he's fantastic, and he's one of those guys. You know, some artists you'll give a sketch list to, and you know you won't talk to him for 3 months, 4 months. Yep. They'll never communicate with you anything. Not Adrian. He's the kind of guy who you give him. Here's a sketch list with six pieces or six illustrations on it, and you know 3 weeks later you have them all, and they all look like that. You know, and he'll send you sketches along the way. Hey, what do you think about this? Should I do this? But not one of those people who's just battening down your door the entire time with questions. He's a professional, so you know he puts his own twist on everything, and he does the work, and he doesn't bother you constantly about it either. But when you get it, the most important thing is when you get it back. Not only does it look fantastic, but it's so much better than anything that I ever had envisioned in my own head. I thought it would be one way, and then boom, he turns it in, and I'm like, man, you do it every time. How do you do it, man? You just keep turning in gold, and you know, what's going to happen? I would hire this guy for forever. If it was up to me, I would have him do you know these illustrations. Him and most of the other guys that work for me as well. I shouldn't even say work, but they collaborate with me. These guys, man, they're all great. I've been extremely lucky to get these guys that they have time, and you know just the interest, the same things that I do, where we can all work together.
Yeah, and you know, I mentioned him already. Ed Bickford is back for this one. He's got some cool, kind of old school looking images here. There's a really great one of the mountain with the skull on it. Oh, but yeah. Another series of pieces here I wanted to draw attention to. Have you worked with John Gulo before, or is this kind of the first time that you've worked with him?
No, this is the first time that I worked with him. He, I found him on Instagram. I was following his page. I thought, man, this guy has such a dynamic style. Let me just reach out to him and just see if you know he's available or he's even interested in this stuff. And it just turns out that he had a very brief window. He does a ton of illustrations. He does a lot of t-shirts and posters and stuff. He had a real brief window, and I said, listen, I'll send you over the text tonight. You take a look at it, tell me if you're interested, and it just happened to work out. So extremely happy with what came back from John.
Yeah, because I'm looking at these five images here that are on the Kickstarter page. Some of these look like they were done like by Bernie Wrightson. They've got that much like crazy, crazy spooky detail in them.
Yeah, he definitely has that that highly detailed style, that Art Adams, Bernie Wrightson style for sure. And he can draw a monster. If you go to his Instagram page, I believe is, let me see if I can remember, is Slime and Grime 69. I think is the name of his Instagram page. Go check that out because it's just. I mean, the feed is great. You just go down and you're like, oh man, this guy, he's got some, you know, real talent. He's great.
Gotcha. Absolutely. And, you know, kind of moving away from the art here for a second, you know, this is your fourth Kickstarter campaign now. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Gotcha. Gotcha, because you've done Jungle Tomb, Howling Crater, and then you did the Phylactery, which we'll be discussing here in just a little bit, because that's shipped out now. That's the first project of yours that I've been able to back. But you know, once that comes in, because it's a zine, and you have to do a physical review of a zine.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
No, and that was a ton of fun to write. I've talked about this on other podcasts, but I'll summarize it here real quick. I had always wanted to do a zine. I was in kind of in the the minor leagues of the zine scene back in, you know, when I was a when I was just a teenager. I would answer all these ads in the back of like Fangoria and Starlog and all these old science fiction horror magazines. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, you'd see like a zine. I don't know what you would call it today, but like you would send your stuff off, and then it would get photocopied and circulated out to a bunch of other people. My stuff mm-hmm. wasn't any good, but I got a lot of cool stuff back from a lot of people across the country. But I was really, really into that. And then that kind of compounded with my interest in Dave Hargrave's Arduin series, which are a kind of really some of the first examples of third-party stuff for Dungeons & Dragons. This goes back to the 70s. Mm-hmm. He had a series of six or seven of these little brown books that were just jam-packed with crazy information and just neat plot hooks and all these cool little crunchy bits, and they were fantastic. I mean, still to this day, I love reading, paging through them some like 40 years later. Love paging through those things, man. They're just fantastic. But those kind of two things kind of came together, and that's where the phylactery comes from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm excited to take a look at that and, you know, see what it looks like in the flesh and do a full review here. But, you know, now we're on to this particular Kickstarter. And the reason I bring up that history there, Kickstarter, as I've discovered, you know, from talking to different people who've been on the show and use the platform, your mileage really does vary when it comes to Kickstarter campaigns. And so I just have to ask you, you know, up to this point, what have you learned about doing a successful campaign, specifically for the kind of content that you're putting out there? What have your previous campaigns taught you about Kickstarter?
Well, a lot. I mean, really, my entire every bit of training or whatever, all my experience comes from running stuff on Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. And then just dealing with customers on the back end, but. I'd say the most important thing is that whatever you're trying to put out, that your voice needs to be authentic. You know, if you're faking it or you're just making something just for the money, people can tell. They can spot that a mile away. And if it doesn't have that authenticity, it's not going to be as successful as it could be. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whatever you put out, I think Jeff Talanian, he said it best. He said that, you know, that people who are backing a Kickstarter or people who become fans or, you know, are interested in your work, they can smell a faker a mile away. Mm-hmm. You know, so any, just be authentic and just, you know, put your vision down and, you know, swing for the fences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one thing, you know, having never run a campaign myself, one thing that I think you're doing well and the best Kickstarters that I've seen have you know, done this well is just being engaged with your backers. You know, we just finished up the Deadlands, the Weird West campaign. I say that like I was involved in it somehow. I just had Chan on the podcast and backed the thing. I didn't have anything to
love
do with
Deadlands.
That. Deadlands is amazing. But, you know, that campaign was very good, and despite, you know, being overworked and having a ton of stuff to do, you know, Clint and Jody were always very engaged with what people were asking for in the comments and, you know, keeping things up to date like that. And I contrast that with another Kickstarter that I just got off of, and, you know, I'm super excited to get the rewards of this thing. But I really do kind of have to put them on notice. IDW Games, with their Batman the Animated Series game that they just did, they've basically shut down as far as giving updates as of April. And it's making a lot of people a little bit antsy and a little bit nervous because they haven't closed down the backer kit yet and haven't given any updates on that. So, I mean, you know, one thing I really do have to give you props for this. You know, I feel like you're very engaged with, you know, what people are saying in the comments and, you know, doing the updates and stuff like that. And so I really do have to give you props for that, because that's super important with something like this.
No, I completely agree. And to be honest, you owe it to your backers, because without them, you don't have, you have nothing. You have no product, you have no project, you have nothing. It's just something that's sitting on your desk at home. So it's the backers who, those are the folks who they bring your project to life. So you've had Daniel Fox on your show?
Yep, absolutely.
So one of the things I really, really liked about what he did with Zweihänder was he continued to be, he listened to his backers, and he continued as the money kept accumulating and accumulating, he kept improving his product. Mm-hmm. And that is a lesson I think that anybody who runs a Kickstarter should learn. They should look at Daniel and do exactly that, because the Zweihänder was beautiful. It's a beautiful book. You know, it's a dynamic product. It's incredible. So I think if more people took that model and just took that extra money and it just kept improving their product, whether that be better art or switching, you know, going up to a hardback or, you know, just all the little details. I think that there's a lesson to be learned from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, Kickstarter, I just have to tell this story because it's become kind of so relevant to all that I've done on this podcast. I bring people on who have campaigns all the time. Have you ever heard of the card game Billionaire Banshee?
No, I have not.
It's one of those like party card games, like Cards Against Humanity, where you are given two cards to kind of formulate your answer. And the premise behind it is you're going on a blind date and you've got a good thing and a good thing and a red flag, and you're basically trying to convince the player to, you know, go on the date despite this the red flag, to make sure that the good thing outweighs the red flag, or that the red flag outweighs the good thing. And one time I don't remember what the positive was, but the negative was he has a Kickstarter campaign that he checks religiously, and he obsesses about it night and day. And my immediate reaction was, oh, so he has a Kickstarter campaign. All right. Yeah. Wouldn't you?
I think it sounds like you've been talking to my wife. My poor, poor, long-suffering wife.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, anytime
she has to hear. Yeah.
Anytime you have something like this where, you know, you're putting yourself out there and you have a thing where basically people have to accept you to buy into this vision, like a Kickstarter campaign or even in my case with a podcast, there's a certain type of person who checks this thing religiously, and I have to admit I'm one of those people.
No, my poor wife has to listen to me talk about this all the time, especially during lockdown. Now that we're all quarantined,
yeah.
And I'm looking at it. I'm looking at it constantly. I'm answering messages. I'm talking to artists. I'm sending, you know, whatever. And she's like, "What are you doing over there?" I'm like, "My God, this guy wants to know whether or not we're going to get a hardback or not, man. I gotta let him know, you know. Hey, did you see that we got another backer, you know?" And she, you know, to her credit, you know, she's wonderful, and she. She takes it all in stride, but I can only imagine how annoying I am 95% of the time when I'm talking about this thing.
Yeah, and just to kind of, you know, reassure you on this campaign, I backed this on the first day, and I believe in that first day, you know, with the overall goal of $1,000 and stretch goals that I think went all the way up to like 660 or 6,600. I think we actually hit that within a single day, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. It funded in 15 minutes and then was at, I want to say 450% after the first day. Early morning of the second day, all the stretch goals were down and we were at over 600. So I think Now it's at 85 or 850%, I think. Mm-hmm. Last time I looked. Yeah, gotcha. it's doing very well, better than I had even hoped. So, but this gives me that leeway to turn in a better product and mm-hmm. To improve things beyond what I'd hoped for. So this is all good news.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and without trying to get you to lock in any commitments here in audio form, you know, when it comes to improvements, what in general sort of things do you have in mind for, you know, making this this package a little bit more complete and a little bit, you know, matching kind of the money that's been raised so far? What kind of plans do you have in that regard?
Well, the guy that I do most of my modules with, the cartographer, his name is Carl Sternberg. He's from Sweden, and he's done a gang of stuff, man. He's done some really, really cool stuff. He has a Patreon called Mega Dungeon. Mm-hmm. He's done so many projects, Night East and Mutants of Ix. He's just done a ton of RPG stuff. But he has a really dynamic style and just a beautiful and frankly kind of a crazy style. But I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that more like kind of like an underground art kind of way. Mm-hmm. The kind of stuff that I was seeing in zines in, you know, the 80s and early 90s. But his style, so dynamic, so cool. I hope to, and again, this is a thing that it'll all have to match up. I'm hoping to get him to draw extra maps. That'll mm-hmm. be definitely be one thing. But he's a very busy guy. He has all of his own stuff. And then he just kind of picks and chooses the projects that he wants. So, if the stars align, then great. I'll get some extra work from him, hopefully. But if not, then if it goes high enough, I would really like to see this thing in hardback, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. But you know, hardback, that's a high benchmark. You know, usually you've got to go 10,000 or more to hit that, because it's not like you can just go and order like, all right, give me 40 hardbacks. That's not how it works. You know, at least not, not locally. A lot of times you've got to, you know, when you order, you've got to order X amount, you know, and then that just drives the price up to depending on your goals and what your funds are, to a unreachable goal. Now there's always doing your business overseas, but you know, it's a weird time right now. So it might not be the best time to send all of our stuff overseas to, to get made for a third, you know, the third of the price it would take here. So that could be an unrealistic goal, but it's definitely something that's already on the table. I've talked to our printer in Jonesboro about plans for that, and I should be getting some quotes back here any day. But I'd really like to see it go hardback. It's just a matter of, you know, let's see how high this thing gets. I'm hoping for good news.
Mm-hmm. And when it comes to, you know, the actual play of this adventure, I guess to kind of prep people for their expectations, if you could tell me, how many character sheets should your players bring to the table when Skulcano Island has been initiated?
So this is a sandbox adventure. This is not a railroady by any means. Again, it's very evocative of Isle of Dread in that fashion, where, hey, this is Skulcano Island. These are the factions on Skulcano Island. These are the dangers. These are the locations. This is what's happening. This is kind of a brief timeline of what's going down. Mm-hmm. You can, you know, listen, if you want to go straight to the source and, you know, duke it out with the bad guys right away, man, go for it. I don't know how that's going to work for you. I don't know how that's going to work out. It may work out great. I don't know. It depends on your play style. Depends on your DM. Mm-hmm. But if you want to take a little bit of time, investigate the island, look for some clues, maybe uncover a few things, get some strengths, you know, ease into exploit some weaknesses, then your chances are definitely going to be better. It's not I wouldn't say it's a party killer by any means, but if you're just reckless abandon and you just want to go in there and just fight the first big thing you see climbing around the side of a mountain, Man, good luck.
And I know, like, you know, we had with we had a cool custom character sheet with Howling Crater. Was there a custom character sheet for this one as well?
No, there's not, and there's a reason for that. The fellow who does those, again, Carl Sternberg, he's just so busy. He doesn't. Character sheets are not really the thing that he does as a normal thing. He's not cranking them out all the time. It was just some special things that he did for the first two. Again, with the stretch goals and with his time, I would love. I mean, and I'd love for him to make a character sheet for Skulcano Island. That would be wonderful. I would just throw money at him, but I just don't know if it's, you know, again with his schedule and whatnot, if that'll be a thing. But hopefully it would be wonderful if we could convince him to do that. Mm-hmm. But you know, if you played Jungle Tomb of the Mummy Bride, that has a very similar, you know, it's in a jungle. There's, you know, all kinds of, you know, crazy monsters running around. That has a similar vibe in a way. You could just very well as well use that custom character sheet from that one. And I'll tell you what, I'll put this to video now or audio. If anybody wants one of those, just DM me, hit me up on, you know, Facebook or Instagram, and I'll send you over the file for free. You know, there's no reason you shouldn't enjoy them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And just because we've mentioned his work so often, in this episode, I just want to, let everyone know, if you are interested in seeing some of Carl's, work, just on social media, he has a great handle on Instagram and Twitter, and that is, of course, Skullfungus, at Skullfungus.
Oh yeah, he's great, and that's another feed on Instagram that you can just scroll through for hours. Mm-hmm. It's super cool. I mean, his work is so dynamic, and it really has that underground art scene feel to it. I don't know how to describe it any other way. He just, nobody else draws like him. Nobody else makes maps like him. He's a one of a kind. He's a real outlier in that way.
Absolutely. And so I now have to take the conversation from one Carl to another Carl, because I just have to ask you, in your travels and your time at conventions and stuff like that, have you ever run into a figure by the name of Carl Kiesler?
Carl Kiesler? I don't believe so. If I did, I didn't know it at the time. Mm-hmm. Tell me more.
Gotcha. He was on the podcast a few weeks back. He does a lot of graphic design work for Savage Worlds and Pinnacle Entertainment. He actually just worked on Deadlands, the most recent edition that just got kickstarted, and he has his own company called Doghouse Rules. But I feel like you and him would get along pretty well.
Yeah.
He made a game in Savage Worlds called Trailer Park Shark Attack.
I love it already.
Yeah, you're in a trailer park, and basically Sharknado happens.
Oh, yeah, that's right up my alley. Mm-hmm. Carl Kiesler, you said?
Yep, Carl Kiesler, and he's on Instagram. You know, I can give you some details about that. You know, where you can follow him. But I bring him up because he is also kind of notorious for his character sheet designs. And you know, like we talked about when he was on the show, he did this whole Sin City game that I wish I could have been a part of, if only I'd been playing Savage Worlds and going to conventions back then. But he's very, very well known for, you know, making custom character sheets and, like, crazy physical things that he gives to people during his games. I think one time, yeah, he showed it to me. One time he made, like, 8 tracks for a game that he was doing that was set in the 70s.
Oh, my God, that's incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does all kinds of crazy stuff. Shane said that when he did his Star Wars game, he made, like, the blister packs from the Kenner toys for character sheets.
Oh, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I need to reach out and meet Carl Carl Kiesler. He sounds like he's right up my alley.
Yeah,
definitely give me his info after the show for sure.
Yeah, when Carl and I spoke, I literally asked him on the air if he was my id made manifest.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, but I feel like you guys would be kindred spirits, so I just had to ask if you'd encountered him in your travels.
Well, I'm getting out to more. Well, the idea was before all this craziness hit was to get out to more conventions this year. I've gone to several locally before things shut down, but you know, North Texas RPG is still in the books. They, you know, they're still going to do their con. And I say that as of today's date, but you know, they're on the hook for that con. So it's whatever form it goes down in. I'll be there from California to Texas for 5 days. So we'll see what happens. But if anybody that's listening to this, you know, ends up at North Texas RPG Con this year, for sure, come by and give me a high five, and I might have some free stuff for you.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's been a big kind of casualty of this year, at least, for my personal schedule. I would love to make it to North Texas. I've wanted to, but I don't think this is going to be my year for it.
No.
Unfortunately.
And look, the con will be a shadow of its normal self. But, you know, because you know a lot of the folks that go to that, they're from the old guard. You know, they're the older guard of Dungeons and Dragons and RPGs in general. You know, the folks who were at TSR at the beginning and who they're the custodians of the early days of the game. I mean, these guys, some of the guys that show up at that convention, they're legends. I mean, Errol Otis was there last year. You got Tim Kask. You know, you got all these fantastic, you know, Jeff Easley, Larry Elmore. I mean, it was packed with talent, you know. And then you got new guys. I say new guys, but just, you know, a younger generation of artists and creators like, you know, Doug Kovacs and, you know, folks like that. And all of them are just super, super approachable. It's just a real shame that the con season has just been decimated like this. And North Texas especially, because it's such a special con.
Yeah, I mean, this was going to be my year. This was going to be my year to get out to these conventions, meet some of you guys who've been on the show, but they just keep dropping like flies.
I'm telling you, man.
I'm just like, there's one that I've kind of set my sights on for September, and I'm afraid to say it out loud. And in fact, I'm not going to say which one it is out loud, just so this doesn't, you know, end up sinking my battleship here again. But you know, there's one in September that I'm scoping out. That I'm really hoping I get to, but I, you know, like North Texas, I was going to go to North Texas this year, and then you know, just you know, Skeeter saying you know he's not going to be there, and a bunch of people are moving their games to online, and I'm like, man, I can play online games at home.
Yeah. I mean, it's a real casualty of the hobby, man. It's super unfortunate, but one of the things that this has done is it's kind of. You know, it's brought a new, an older generation of gamers are starting to get online and run virtual games. And that's a good thing because, you know, it gives a chance for a younger set of gamers who would never have had a chance to play a game with, you know, some of these legends. You know, now they're, you know, they're, not only are they running them for like, you know, this your Frog God Games Day or, you know, Cyclops Con or any of those, you know, online things that are happening. They're running games on Discord now. I mean, there's something cool about seeing a 65-year-old legend of the hobby, you know, running games on Discord. That's pretty cool, you know?
Yep. Yeah. And as much as I really don't like virtual gaming and have very much had to learn to live with it over these past few months, I will say there is a phenomenon of gaming, you know, going all the way back to the very early days of the guy who will pick up the books, read them, but just not have anyone to play with. In this new world of the internet, that guy finally has someone to play with. And I really do, as much as I don't like virtual gaming, I really do have to, you know, hand it to all those increases in technology that we've had that have enabled this, you know, Discord, Roll20, all that, you know. Finally, the people who read the books and, you know the rules inside and out, they've got a chance to play, even if they don't know anyone who plays. And so even with my aversion to virtual gaming, I do have to give it up for that.
Yeah, it's just something cool about seeing. I mean, again, I'm not a big champion of it either. I don't have that much experience with it, but something cool about seeing all these folks coming together online and playing these games, and you know, making new friendships, and you know, it's what is at the heart of the hobby to begin with. You know, sitting around a table, you know, throwing dice to your friends, fighting monsters, looting treasure, you know, having a good time. Except there's no table. Now everybody's just looking at each other on a screen. You know, if that's the way we have to go for the short term, then, you know, that's the concession we need to make, you know. I get it.
Yep, and it better be the short term. That's all I'm going to say.
No, I'm right there with you, man.
Yeah.
I want to get back to playing with my local game group as well.
I can't do this forever. I'm losing my mind here. We talked about this kind of before on the show, but you know, for those of you who don't know, my job is pretty much entirely based around video conferencing and you know, talking to people via, you know, different video conferencing solutions. And so, you know, now that all of my forms of social interaction have moved to video conferencing, everything in my life just feels like a continuation of my job. So that's my aversion to virtual gaming, for those of you virtual gaming diehards out there. That's why I don't like it. And, you know, one thing that I am excited about is, you know, with North Texas, you know, being focused on kind of those old school, I think it's pre-1991 RPGs that they focus on. Mostly, I was afraid this year that I didn't have kind of the experience with any of those older game systems, but come 2021, I will have experience with some older game systems. And I think, you know, in 2021, if, you know, they're still going to do a North Texas RPG Con 2021, I'm going to sign up to run a James Bond role-playing game session there.
Oh, very cool, man. But listen, this is a great thing about North Texas, and you know, a lot of cons in general, but especially North Texas, is that you can find all kinds of. It's sure there's a focus on those older games. There's a lot of you know, BX and Beckme and First Edition and stuff like that running around, and older games that you don't see in print anymore. But there's a very, very healthy dose of modern gaming going on. Well, you know, Call of Cthulhu, 5e. DCC, MCC. You've got a lot of games that get playtested there, so you can get on playtesting groups. It is a fun environment, and you can pack out your schedule off of a virtual tabletop or tabletop events or whatever it's called. You can pack that out, and it might be a busy schedule, man, but you're going to meet so many cool people. You're going to run into so many cool names and faces, sit in on some really great seminars. I know I sound like I'm some sort of pitch man for North Texas, but I'm really not. It's just my favorite convention. It's a great convention, such a cool vibe, and nobody's a jerk. That's the wonderful thing. Sometimes you meet your heroes, and man, they just don't hold up. Not true with North Texas. You meet these guys, and everybody is just, I mean, they're just as cool as can be.
Yeah, and I really need a network, because I've been trying to get Jim Ward on the show for a long time, and
he's a gem of a human being, man. I'll tell you what, really, really nice guy.
Absolutely. Well, let's see. Let me check time here real quick. But yeah, having, you know, you guys and then the Frog God people coming on the show all the time, all I hear is North Texas and then Game Hole Con. So at some point I'm gonna have to end up going to both.
Yeah, Game Hole Con, that's the other one that's on my my schedule for this year. So we'll see what the world looks like in October, but you know, as it stands, you know, I'm ready to go. that'll be one that I'm going, that'll be my first time there. So, but I've heard nothing but good things about that. Everybody that I've talked to says, hey, this thing runs like clockwork. It is just, I mean, that it's one of the best cons, if not the best con, as far as the way things go, the way things are set up, and just how everything operates, that it's just flawless. So I'm really, really excited to get off to that one. Plus, you know, any chance to get over to Madison, Wisconsin, which is one of my favorite cities in the U.S., I'm down.
Absolutely. Gotcha. Well, as we're kind of, you know, running up against our time here, Levi, basically anything that you've got to promote coming up, obviously you still have the campaign here with, I think we're up to, was it 14 days to go in this thing? Yep, 14 days to go as we're recording this. Anything you've got to promote, go ahead, do it. The mic is yours.
Well, I don't know about so much as there is to promote. There's some stuff that I have coming up. Issue number 2 of the Phylactery is going to drop here in the fall. And then shortly after that, there is another module. It's called Glimmering Crypt of the Iron King. And it's a much shorter module than the other three, the previous three, much lower price point as well. So that's coming up. And then for Zion Quest next year, of course, Phylactery 3. And then I have a trio of modules that are kind of coming down the pike. I'm looking at actually releasing a free module. If not towards the end of the year around Christmas, then probably the beginning of next year. And it's a Weird West module called the Town That Dreaded Cream Filling. Now, again, that's a crazy title, really weird, sounds kind of silly. but it's, again, very rooted in that Weird West, genre, that vibe, that aesthetic. If you've ever seen a movie like The Stuff, or you've ever seen any of those Saturday morning schlocky B horror movies, it's got a lot in common with those. In addition to being, a Deadlands, Aces and Eight, Boot Hill sort of Western, you know, the premise being, hey, you know, you've got Twinkie the kid, and what happens when, you know, his expiration date is up? You know, he goes bad. You know, so. And again, free adventure, so take it for what it is. But it's a super fun thing that's developing. It's coming along pretty good. So I hope to release that for free coming up.
Absolutely, gotcha. Yeah, that sounds amazing. I'm in already.
And again, it's free, so you know, if you can like it or you can hate it, whatever. But it's an interesting premise for sure.
Got to do something with all these cowboy minis that I've been painting that no one seems to appreciate. There is a noticeable difference between the amount of likes I get when I post something fantasy and when I post one of my Western minis. And it's this weird inverse of what I think it will be, because I think I do a way better job on the Western ones than I do on even like the Nolzers ones that I do, because those are really kind of hard to paint. But people were just like, D&D, yeah, and they upvote. And then I'm just like, here's my take on Curly Bill Brocious from Tombstone. And people are like, eh, okay.
That's a genre that I actually don't get to play as much as I would like. Now, back way back in the day, I played Boot Hill quite a bit. And then when Kenzer and Company released Aces and Eights, I was all over that. That's a great system. And of course Deadlands, but it was one of those deals where I could never find enough people to play. So I'd have a one-off game here, or I'd run a game at a bookstore or something on the weekends, and I just was never able to play it. So I'd really like to get, I'd really like to play that genre myself. It appeals to me quite a bit. I'm a fan of Carnival and all those kind of Weird West movies that have kind of trickled in over the years, Bone Tomahawk and The Missing, and all those really cool Weird Western movies.
Yeah, I'm a huge Western fan. I just wish more people were, so then I might actually be able to pull off a Deadlands campaign.
Well, there you go.
It's one of those things. Anytime I feel like a lot of people run into this, but anytime you're like, hey, let's do a Western game, initially everyone's all in. Everyone's like, oh, this is going to be fun. And then you get to the table, and you know, people then realize, oh, wait, this is a Western game. And I only have like a vague idea of what that means, and then it just all kind of falls apart by the end.
Yeah. Now those that's the one genre I wish that I played more of. Call of Cthulhu being the game that I wish I had more time for, but one genre that I wish I could play more of, Weird West for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Time to combine those two.
There you go.
All right, well, Levi, it's great talking to you as always. This has been a ton of fun. Everyone, go out there and back Escape from Skullcano Island if you haven't done so already. It looks like it's going to be a ton of fun, and I'm looking forward to reading that adventure and you know, seeing if I can Shanghai some people into playing it with me.
Bring extra character sheets.
Absolutely. All right, well, guys, that is going to do it for today's episode. Next week, we are finally going to have that interview with my first DM, that being Muhammad. He's going to come on the show. You know, we're going to talk about some of those early days, and you'll get to hear some of the stories of my first sessions playing RPGs and my first sessions as a DM. It's going to be a ton of fun. We're going to go over some stories that I've already talked over with, you know, the other members of the gaming group, but we're going to get Muhammad's take on them, which is great because he was heavily involved in all of them. So until next time, whether you rolled a 1 or a 20, I'm so glad that you rolled your bones with me, Ryan Howard, and I'll see you next time.